What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mongols Podcast. I'm Mike, with me is Kev and Josh. Coming up on today's show, we'll sit down with Coach Brandt to get his thoughts on the season, how this team can improve, and what we can expect heading into next year. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen, up to the middle, back to
Coach, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Happy to be here for sure.
Well, we are definitely happy to have you. You know, I just have to bring it up because John Krasinski put it out there on Twitter. You did have hip surgery. You said you're doing well, right? You're good?
I didn't know John did that. That means I owe him one. I didn't know that. Doing good. Doing good. Quick recovery, doing awesome, and looking forward to just being strong and full health again, obviously.
That's great to hear. So it's been a few weeks since the season ended. What's a manager like yourself up to at this time of year? Do you kind of send everyone out of the stadium and kind of clear their heads, or are you chatting with your backroom staff about the upcoming plans for next season? What's going on right now?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, and I'm pretty sure it's the same thing around just about everybody in the USL. I haven't been in the league all that long, obviously, but. I feel like it's one of those things that probably gets heated up earlier and earlier every year. It's just player movement. And so, yeah, I think this is a really critical time. And honestly, not that anything is, kind of quote unquote happened yet, but there's a lot going on in terms of dealing with our current guys where, we're in the middle of making decisions now and then other guys around the league. And I think you kind of multiply that by whatever team is in the league. And that's the situation right now. It's pretty active with people kind of jockeying for position and finding out who's where and who's picking up whose options and who's not and this sort of thing. So it's a busy time.
You had mentioned in one of the final press conferences, this being your first full year in the USL, you said there were 267 things that you learned. And I'm sure there are some things that you probably learned early that you knew you couldn't change until next season, but then there are other things that you could change as the season progressed. Just, being in your first full season, how difficult has it been to really manage all of that?
Yeah, I think, and I've said this a couple of times, I think it's a combination of, and I actually do remember saying that, and I do remember saying 267, so there you go.
We wrote it down,
So I think it's a combination of, learning a lot of new things, first full pro season, and also, again, just a rapidly changing league. And that's the part I've said a couple times. And I think everybody's learning curve is just kind of tipped for that because I think standards and who's where and how things are done are changing league-wide. And you don't, not that you don't know who the league is anymore, but is the league Cincinnati and Louisville and just what they do and how they operate and who they are? Is it Pittsburgh, Richmond, Rochester, Harrisburg, which are some of the older franchises and whatnot? There's just a lot happening. But I think for me, I do look back and I think, we had to go on what we had to go on after last year's kind of half season with me and a really difficult season for the Riverhounds. And I look back a year ago exactly, early in the off season, and we knew some things, but I tell you what, I just didn't have the perspective that I have now. And so I think you kind of put those things together. And, I find myself in May, June, or July this year, and I'm like, well, things are coming to light. I'm figuring this out. I'm learning. And I think that, carried through all the way to the end of the season. And look, results played a part in that. I think everybody knows it felt like we were 2 points out of a playoff spot, like, all year. I know that's not the reality. It just felt that way. It was just forever, and we're just always on the edge, and this is going to tip the right way. And then at the very end, of course, we let it go the other way, and that kind of accentuated the feelings of saying, hey, there was a lot to learn, and I made a lot of mistakes and this sort of thing. And so that's probably a little bit where that comment came from as well.
If Dave Brandt today could go back 365 days and talk to Dave Brandt then, what's one or two things that he would say to him?
Yeah, I'd tell you a really critical thing right now is we had too big a squad. And I don't speak for any other USL or NASL coaches because I think squad sizes vary, honestly. And I think for me and what I'm trying to do, and I'm banking at least something on this as we move ahead. I mean, obviously not everything, but this is not a small or insignificant thing. We will have a very, very tight squad next year. And I think, you know, the reason I think it's a big deal is because, you know, for me, I've talked about culture, accountability, high standards. I think we made strides in those areas. I don't think we got far enough. And I think our squad size was simply too big. You know, I didn't do it for absolutely no reason. It's not like I closed my eyes and picked players and signed players and whatever. But I don't think the depth that we had, honestly, and this is another one of the things I've learned, really, really paid off. I think, you know, we were a team probably that was more even from top to bottom in talent, ability, resources, whatever, on our roster than I think a lot of other teams. And so I think our high side needs to get higher. And our second 11 needs to not be as big. I mean, our second 11 was off in a second 14 this year. I mean, and so it was just a big, big locker room. It was okay, but it was a lot to manage, and it's not, you know, it's not my vision for what's going, you know, what needs to happen moving forward. And so that'll be a significant change for us, and, you know, one I plan to execute, and we're moving on now.
Seeing the locker room, you had mentioned at the AGM that you kind of came into this team and you saw that the culture here was not the best. How do you think the culture is now as far as the team goes?
I think a step forward. I mean, honestly, I do think the locker room in 2016, for whatever reasons, had really gone that way of just absolutely every man for himself. And, you know, I wasn't here at the start of that, and there's lots of reasons for that. But it, you know, it just wasn't something that I'd experienced before. I don't think it's good in a team construct, really kind of for anybody in any sport. And, you know, just the Indians were running the reservation, so to speak. And, you know, some of that was good, but some of it was bad. And again, everybody was just all over the place. And I think, I do think there was much more of a team feel, a stronger identity, a team construct this year. But, you know, for me, it was kind of step two in what has to be a three-step process. And if you don't or never get to step three, it's not going to be what you want, and it's not going to give you the best chance to move forward and be what you want to be. And, you know, as I say a lot of these things, I do think there's a strong feeling, especially among the, you know, certainly the coaching staff, the senior members of the team, the guys who've been around a little bit, and it'll sound terrible because we didn't get it done. But you know, we just felt like with a couple bounces going the other way, we're just right there, we're right there. So there was certainly a feeling this year of we're right there. And we let it get away at the end, starting with the Steel game, or maybe starting with the goal that Rochester scored us in the 90th minute in the game before Steel to tie us. So, you know, when we talk about some of this stuff, I think you can do very well in what I call step two. You can absolutely succeed, but it still means it's only step two and you're going somewhere. And I think from a locker room standpoint, a culture standpoint, I think it probably always was going to be kind of the next step in the process. But I think next year needs to be step three regardless, and certainly results need to kind of show that.
You started mentioning around mid-season, you know, sort of being in this step two of this three-step process. And, you know, I coached youth teams, and I became very intrigued because I was like, you know, what is Dave Brandt's three-step process? Like, I need
what
to...
What is step two, right?
Yeah, what is step three then? You know, in your mind, what is step three in this process?
Yeah, I think, honestly, if I were to kind of quickly define it, I think step one is simply just even the initialization of new ideas, new thoughts, the introduction of new ideas and new thoughts. Step two is really obviously beginning to integrate them, and you start digging your roots deeper. I'm a big one kind of from an analogy standpoint to talk about digging roots. And, you know, when you think about the roots of a plant or a tree or something like that, there are those things below the surface that you don't see that are either, you know, honestly, very, very flimsy and shallow, and that's when the tree just gets pulled up easily by a storm or something else, something going wrong, or they're strong. And often you need strong roots before you really see something come up at the top. And step three is when you know you've got those strong roots dug, and it allows you to really move forward. And, you know, there's no way, I think, coming off 2016 that we had roots in place. I think things have been introduced. I think the table had been set, the direction had been set, on and off the field. And 2017 was a time for sticking with those things, digging those roots deeper. And, you know, look, it's not like these steps are each exactly, you know, 9 months or 10 months or a USL season or whatever, and it has to be 2016, 2017, 2018. I don't think that's true. Sometimes it can be slower in a different situation. Sometimes it can be quicker. I do think for us, and I do think 2017, we found ourselves just in step two. That was the reality. That wasn't necessarily the plan. I'm all for getting out of two and into three and just, you know, having this thing take off as quickly as I can. But I think once we were in it, you know, I knew we were in that process and I knew it was going to keep getting better. But I think it's going to be a thing where I think 2018 needs to start in every way for me. I mean, not even just in visible results, but, you know, on a much higher plane of understanding for our guys and our staff and our identity and our purpose and what we're doing and what's going on.
So I think we asked you this question last time we had a chat, but we'll ask it again in the context of the full season to reflect on. Have you found there to be a big difference between coaching younger players, like in the context of the collegiate level versus professionals over the course of the entire season? And how much do you think this could impact, you know, how the team is then built over the next few years in your eyes?
Yeah, I think the answer for me is now probably yes and no. I probably minimized that effect or the answer in the past, you know, whether you asked or somebody else, because I do think there's an element of soccer being soccer and teams being teams and players being players and the game is the game. It's pretty universal in that respect. On the other hand, yeah, I think one of the things that I learned through the course of the year, I think there are some at least strongly subtle differences, if not more. And it's difficult. And I think everybody in the pro game probably senses this. I think it's, you know, I think there's kind of an inherent worrying about self in the pro game from players. You know, it's their career, it's their livelihood. That's not as prevalent in, yeah, I mean, people are people. And again, it goes back to the other end. I mean, not that you don't have guys in the club ranks, the youth ranks, you know, at higher levels, the college ranks, who aren't worried about themselves and where they're headed, because you're always headed somewhere, right? I mean, you're on a high level youth team, you're trying to get a college scholarship, you're the best player in your college team, and you're trying to go pro. And so there's always this, but I do think there's an element that's difficult of kind of looking out for self and self-preservation. It's not even meant to be bad. I mean, it's a reality thing at this level for these guys, and they have to be thinking about themselves. But I do think it also works naturally against camaraderie, mm-hmm. team, you know, just all the things that are important on that end. And I'm sure that's true in all pro sports. I mean, obviously, I'm just in soccer, but I think it's a big factor. I really do. It's something to fight, something to learn about if you haven't been in that before.
You know, talking about players, and you mentioned just a bit earlier about, you know, you have some idea of who may be back. You're still trying to figure that out. We know that most of the exit interviews have happened. When do you think, you know, you may sit down and really have this, or, you know, obviously we know that you're a goal-oriented guy and you probably have like a chart laid out of this is what I want to have accomplished by then. You know, do you have a timeline as to when you want to have, you know, most of the roster nailed out, or, you know, what are you thinking in that regard?
Yeah, I think so. And I think I'm really sensitive to trying to let all the guys on the roster in 2017 know their status as soon as possible. You know, a year ago, they all knew their status at the exit meeting. And you're right, exit meetings have all happened now for our group. And some of them just in the last week, as opposed to the week before. But they've all happened now. And in most cases, guys don't know their status. At the same time, you know, I don't want to take advantage of them or of that. And I think guys will know fairly soon. I think in the next week or two, we'll make sure that everybody knows, you know, who we want back. And some of those, it's not just a question of who we want back. There's, you know, there's financials to consider and negotiations and agents to talk to and whatnot. So it can get a little bit complicated, of course. But I want guys to know their status. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned I've got charts for sure. And so we're working on the other end of different guys, be they around the league or whatever, different players on our radar and trying to put it together. But I do think I'll be a little bit more careful. I mean, I already mentioned roster is going to be smaller. So that's going to put a premium on spots to begin with. We're going to carry fewer guys, period. And I do think I'm going to really try to save two or three spots for the very beginning of preseason, at least. I did not do that last year. So not going to be a lot of spots open in preseason, that's for sure. But two or three, I'd like to think that we'll keep a couple open.
Well, good. So when I come to that open tryout, just have eyes for me, and I'll just jump right in the roster for you.
So you're saying there's a chance. That's
so
right.
You're saying there's a chance. You know, how much of, you know, you talked a little bit about scouting new players, bringing guys in. How much of that is just on you personally, and how much of that is, you know, do you have help within the organization that helps you go out and find players and things like that, or is it mainly on you?
Yeah, for sure. I think there are three of us primarily involved in that. And so myself, Jason Cutney, our sporting director, and Dan Visser, who's my main field assistant. So the three of us, with help from Hunter Gilstrap and Andrew Scheck as well, other two staff members. But I think the three of us have really, you know, that's been almost full time since the end of the season, or even, you know, a couple days before the end of the season, to be honest. We've been all over that.
So assuming the organization has goals for the off season, as a coach, what are some of the things that you want to get accomplished come spring?
By the time preseason starts, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly think it's all about, it's just singular. It's building a team that can be not only a playoff team, but, you know, I talked even last year about staying in the top four, the top six all year. And I do believe that's possible. And, you know, I've got lofty goals, and we'll do what we can, and where you end up is where you end up. And we need to end up in the playoffs. That being said, you know, I want a team that can make a statement and just be in that top group all year, and not in and out. And then, you know, we're hoping at the end goes well and all that. It needs to go well anyway, of course. But I want to build some consistency, certainly a style of play, a mentality, and a winner. And I think we had pieces of that this year. We certainly didn't have all of that. And then, like I mentioned a couple of times, we let ourselves and others down at the end. I think no question about it.
So I want to set up this next question with some context. So just kind of stick with me for a second. So we saw examples like the first portion of the Cincinnati away game, or the first game against Red Bulls at home, always kind of sticks out in my mind, where the system and the players really just seemed to click perfectly together. And in the past, there was a lot of talk of maybe wanting to play with, you know, vertical passing, or perhaps having a specific style of play. Now, obviously, every manager has an idea of a certain system they believe is the best way to play, but how much of this gets kind of altered on a week-to-week basis, depending on, you know, whether it's the opposition or even like injuries in the squad or things like that?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and I understand what you're saying. So, you know, I think for me, this year was a departure in a lot of ways from what I've kind of always done, what I've normally done. You know, we played a tight, narrow 4-4-2 that I think really favored our personnel. And it was a little bit, I think, in building for it, of recognizing that it was going to be a good system and style for the personnel we were keeping. And then we added more around it. Because the question is, right, do you recruit for a certain system and style of play, or do you go with what you have? Well, for us, I felt like with what we were keeping from 2016, and a guy like Corey, for example, was a big part of that. I think a lot of what we did this year really was centered around Corey and doing what was best for him to create chances for Corey and to allow Corey to press. He presses very well. And so what you saw was, you know, I do think we were very vertical as opposed to kind of being lateral and side to side. We were very central. I was on guys to stuff the ball in the middle, combine, get it wide once we'd suck the ball, the opponent into the middle. That being said, a lot of our game plan this year was predicated on pressing the opposition. And so sometimes when you saw different kind of permutations or whatever, that was us changing for the opposition in order for us to kind of be true to ourselves in pressing. Some tactical changes allowed us to press the opposition. So it was a little bit of changing for them, and it was a little bit of changing so that we could do what we do best, if that makes sense. I mean, I'll say now, and I've been very just kind of forward and open, in talking about this, both to returning players and also to, for lack of a better term, recruits. I mean, guys that we're talking to, guys that we're in conversation with about potentially signing, is that, you know, I do think you'll see a slightly different system next year. I think it's likely to be 4-3-3. I mean, this year it was always two up top. We had a lot of forwards in the fold. I think you'll see a 4-3-3 next year with some subtle changes. But I still think you'll see a desire to press. I think you'll see a desire to penetrate on the ground, and those things are constant for me. So I hope that – it's a big question. I hope that begins to answer the question.
You know, you mentioned switching to a 4-3-3. Is that sort of your reaction to sort of the first full year in the USL, or is this sort of the system that you came in wanting to play and you're now just getting the chance?
It's the system that so I've always played with one up top. I've always played 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1. And look, I mean, the game's changing so fast. I mean, you can say something one day, it's an exaggeration almost, that, you know, hey, I would never do this, or sounds archaic or whatever. And I feel like 3 weeks later, it's in vogue again because, you know, Chelsea's doing it. So all of a sudden, and I'm serious about that. It's like crazy.
Three at the back. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, 3-5-2 and 3-4-3 are just rampant right now. And we can all blame Antonio Conte a year ago because he made it fashionable. In the meantime, you know, Leicester were winning the league in 4-4-2. And I mean, who plays 4-4-2 the normal way anymore? I mean, that was for Manchester United in the early 2000s. I mean, please, that's just past us. So there's just a lot happening in the game. But I think for me, 4-3-3 has always been me and my background. I think as importantly, you know, my background has been having the ball. And so I've always been a coach who's valued having the ball, having more possession than the other team, if at all possible. And in fact, you know, almost one of my faults, you could say, in the past has been that I've cared too much about that. Because in the end, the score is what matters. And I think around the world, you know, that's been a big thing, this battle between, you know, okay, you're Barcelona or you're Bayern Munich and great, you have the ball, but you got beat by whoever who had, you know, 30% possession, but just beat you 2-0 or something like that. And you have to be pragmatic. The score matters. And I think this year, we did take a more pragmatic approach. And so for me, it was a change away from what I normally do. But, you know, I'm flexible. It's okay. And, you know, I'm sitting here on the phone with you guys at the very end of October saying, you know, it almost worked well, because it really did. I think we were just in game after game and walking out of game saying, you know, gosh, we had that finish on the table. It's there to be taken, or that mistake in the back that is not a tactical thing. Right. I mean, it's not a style of play thing. It's not tactics. That becomes player execution, and we are right there. And I think we felt that through really till the very end of the season, that we were right there, extremely competitive with everybody except Louisville City. I tip my hat to Louisville City. We couldn't touch it. Everybody else, you know, I think we would play in any day of the week and be fine.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned it, I think, you know, with a couple games left, that Louisville is the only team that we didn't take points from. So, you know, with the margins being as tight as they are, how much, you know, every team has to deal with injuries, you know, but we obviously had, you know, Rich Balshan go down, you had Hollingsworth go out, you had the whole keeper situation. How much, yeah. You know, how much of that, you know, edge of the knife is just staying injury free over the course of the season? And after going through what we went through this season, obviously, you know, I think paring down the roster makes makes a lot of sense. But in your mind, is there any trepidation at all just because of the amount of injuries that we had this season?
Yeah, I don't think so. And I mean, to go back to the first part of your question, I mean, Ben Swanson was a big part of that as well. Bucci Ovinwa got hurt middle of the year. I mean, it was pretty rampant, and the keeper situation was certainly unusual. And so, you know, I think it threw off our rhythm. At the same time, I do think we were deep enough to handle it. And so I wouldn't put a lot on that, but it was an unusual injury year. You know, relative to smaller roster size and injuries, I mean, that's a little bit the beauty of the pro game. I would never do that in college. I would never go down, you know, in a college season to a small 18-man roster or anything like that, because you really got nowhere to turn if you have injuries. I think in the pro game, you know, loans, signing a player, you can always get somebody and hopefully even get somebody good. And especially in the USL with MLS players by our MLS teams by midseason looking to loan players potentially who are good players and maybe aren't getting minutes. You know, if you've got issues, I think that's a way to go.
You mentioned loaning players. Obviously, Greenspan was a huge part of, you know, the center back situation over the course of the year. News came out, obviously, about, the partnership with Columbus dissolving. Are you at all, does that give you any worry about trying to get players on loan, or do you think that that's like a non-factor in your mind?
Yeah, I'd say it's a non-factor. And the affiliation is difficult, and I've said this several times, and I've talked about this with Greg Berhalter. It's just a really tricky situation where what's best for them is not always best for us, and vice versa. And in terms of who they have to send down, it might work out really well. Like in 2016 with Zach Steffen, like that worked out really well. You know, they happened to have Zach not playing. We happened, again, to have keeper injuries, and maybe that's a thing around here we need to watch. But yeah, it worked out really well. You know, it wasn't as great a fit this year, and there were numerous times where, you know, Greg gave me a shout and said, hey, I got so-and-so, you know, it's like Wednesday, and he called me, can I send him down for this weekend? And it just wasn't right. I mean, whoever it was is a good player, but I didn't need him. We had other guys ahead of him who were training with us day-to-day. So it's a really tricky thing, and I think that's where, you know, some relationships with some other clubs started, which became just very situational. You know, Joe with Minnesota United, Shannon Gomez from New York City FC, Alex Kapp, who actually didn't play, but a goalkeeper who came in from Minnesota. Those were just situational where we had a need and a team around the league had a player, you know, in a certain position who they were willing to send either to play or in Alex's case to give it a shot. Alex didn't play in the end, but you see what I mean.
Yeah. So one of the things we did see mostly towards the end of the season was kind of just slow starts for the Hounds. It seemed like we let goals in at the beginning, and then second half would come around and we would look a lot better. Now that you had some time to think about it and, you know, reflect on the season, what do you think needs to happen to stop that from being the issue?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's no reason, there's no excuse. Do I yell at him at halftime and so we play a better second half and I need to yell at him before the game starts? And I mean, I'm being facetious and serious at the same time. I think Bethlehem was unforgivable, where, you know, we gave up three goals very early, and we just hadn't done that all year. And it just came so out of the blue. I'm looking around like, you know, who am I and where am I and what is going on type thing, that sort of thing. In Ottawa scored earlier than us, and I can't remember who else. I mean, Red Bull was first half away. And then, you know, and then we fight and hang in there. And Steele, we almost came back. But, yeah, you can't dig those sort of holes for yourself. But I think if coaches had answers to that, it would just simply stop happening, because we'd all as coaches execute whatever it takes to not have our teams concede early. It's not right. It's not good. And it can't happen, but I don't know that the answers as to why it does happen, if and when it does, you know, are that easy. And, some of them right now, honestly, I wish I had answers for, but I don't.
I sympathize with you. I go through the same thing with my youth teams, and I'm like, why? Like, what else can I do here, man? Like, it just, so I get it. We obviously want to be respectful of your time. So I got just a couple rapid fire questions here for you, and then we'll get you out the door. So we'll try to burn through these. So number one, what was your favorite moment of the past season?
I don't have one. It just wasn't good enough. That's a horrible answer. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're getting into your head here, man. We're getting into the mindset of Coach Brandt. We get it. So if you don't have a favorite moment, what was the most difficult part of the past season?
The most difficult part was that long stretch through, and I don't have the schedule in front of me at all, and I don't know what I'm saying about myself here, but through June and July, where wins were really hard to come by. We were drawing games left and right, losing one here or there, and somehow still staying, you know, really just kind of all over that playoff spot. It seemed that if we dropped points, so did other people. If we gained a point, so did other people. I do think the team hanging in there, which they did do during that long stretch through just the, you know, the dog days of summer, for lack of a better term, was a really telling part of this group, and doesn't explain, you know, why we dropped. You know, we went 0-3-1 in our last four games, because we were really set pretty well going into those last four games, but we needed to do well in those last four games. So, it's hard as far as a favorite part of the season. I mean, there were some good things. I think beating Charleston away early, I think the first game with Red Bull, I think there were numerous. I mean, Tampa at home, there were some good results, but, you know, it's so clouded by the end that it's hard to, you know, for I think any of us, I think all of our players would agree to say anything overly positive at this point.
So what are you most looking forward to heading into 2018?
I think a fresh start for sure. I think for anybody who's, you know, look, there's four teams left at this point, and there's a lot of teams out sitting home where we are. And I think for everybody at that point, you want a fresh start. You want the slates to be wiped clean, and you want to get going again. So for sure, that's what I'm looking forward to most.
What makes you optimistic about the Hounds as a whole moving forward at this point?
I think the progress we made in 2017, which I am hard on myself. I mean, in other words, it wasn't good enough. I think we're all very discontent and disgruntled about the end and about not making playoffs. At the same time, I think, and this did not happen in 2016, I think we all feel that we're a playoff-level team. And so I think that's a good thing heading into another season when you feel that you didn't do right by yourself, that you're better than that. That was not the feeling coming off 2016. I think we essentially got what we deserved or, you know, whatever in 2016. And I think it's our own fault. We feel a bit hard done by in 2017 that we're better than that.
That's fair. Let's talk a little bit not about the Hounds at this point. Now that we're in the offseason, you mentioned a little bit of Chelsea, a little bit of Barcelona. Is there a team that you follow in the offseason?
Yeah, I'm absolutely in love with Napoli. Anybody watch Napoli?
Whoa.
I know a bit of them. They're having a really good season, right? They're kind of like king of Italy right now.
Yeah, they are ridiculous. I like, for me, they trump Guardiola's Barcelona from, you know, whatever, 6-7 years ago, that era. They're unbelievable to watch. I would encourage anybody to watch Napoli. I also think that you know, Dortmund is very much in vogue, I mean, to be a popular team, right? I mean, because Klopp was there and then Tuchel, and he's just kind of cool to like Dortmund. I mean, who doesn't like Dortmund? It's a cool thing. Christian Pulisic plays there. Who doesn't like Dortmund? But, you know, for me, as much as I'm a Klopp fan and all that, but...
Me too. Like,
yeah, I still felt like Dortmund was kind of, that's fine. Not passe, but they just weren't on my hot list. But they have a new coach this year, Peter Bosz, who's a relatively young Dutch coach, kind of out of nowhere. He had Ajax last year, only coached Ajax for 1 year. I think he's doing a phenomenal job at Dortmund. I mean, they've gone from kind of Klopp's counter-pressing 4-2-3-1 type team to a much more wide-open, high-press 4-3-3. And I think they're super exciting to watch. Some similarities to Napoli, but certainly some differences. But if I could pick one team, I'm telling anybody out there, find a way to watch Napoli. They're mesmerizing on both sides of the ball. Absolutely fantastic.
I'm going to have to go check that out. I need to find them on TV and go scope it out. Here's a quick, you know, you could give us an explanation if you want. If not, no worry. Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi. Because you got to admire Ronaldo, but it's all athleticism. Not that Messi's not an incredible athlete, but Messi's more of a footballer.
I agree. No worries. Last question. Considering that most people hear this are going to hear this on Halloween, what's your go-to candy?
Oh man, talk about the night. It's unbelievable. So Kit Kat. There you go.
Kit Kat. Perfect.
All right.
Perfect.
We'll say Kit Kat.
So there you go. If you guys have any candy that you want to send to Coach Brandt, send him all the Kit Kats. So when he gets back to the office, he has a pile of them on his desk. Coach, you know, we appreciate you coming on, especially so close to, you know, your hip procedure. Hopefully, you know, you mentioned the recovery is going quickly. Hopefully that goes well and you get everything done, everything you want to accomplish this offseason. Like I said, we really appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks again.
For sure. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too.
Thanks,
bye.
Coach.
So obviously, huge, huge thanks to Coach Brandt for stopping by. You know, obviously the season just wrapped up. He just had his procedure. We talked to him a little bit. He's still working his way back into even, you know, walking without a cane. So it means a ton that he was able to come on and share his thoughts. Guys, you know, was there anything in particular that stood out to you from anything that he said? Kev?
I think my question was the best question, as it revealed 4-3-3 confirmed for next season. I'm kidding. The entire interview was really good. No, I mean, I thought that was really interesting. It was nice to kind of, I think all season long I've been kind of banging on about not really knowing like a Brandt system or how you want to play and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, we're talking about these thoughts, you know, a minute after we just got off the call with Coach Brandt. So we haven't had a ton of time to go back and listen to it and reflect
feels,
on it.
It feels like an excuse, Kevin. It feels like you're just...
Well, I mean, it is.
Do we need the Woman goals to come back and just take your spot? Is that what needs to happen here?
You know what? They did a really good job.
I think
it was, you know, he revealed a lot about maybe, you know, how he wants to play, especially how he maybe wants to shape the team going forward next year, and then how, you know, aware. I think we also talked about it seemed like he was maybe kind of, yeah, like an away system and a home system. And his answer kind of revealed that that might have been the case. You know, he was kind of looking at a game by game basis and kind of tweaking what needed to happen. So that I loved getting that kind of insight. That was really cool.
Josh, was there anything that jumped out at you?
It's just the whole thing in general, the fact that he was so open about the system and about, you know, the way things went and going into good detail about all that. It's fantastic. It's a lot of times, you know, professionals, coaches, that kind of stuff, they can be a lot more closed off about their thoughts about everything and not, you know, wanting to reveal the inner workings. But yeah, that was awesome.
I think, you know, if we had given him more heads up on the rapid fire stuff, you know, he probably would have came up with a favorite moment, you know, saying he didn't have a favorite moment. I'm sure there was one in there and he's probably looking back on it and saying, oh, I should have said this. But I will say the one thing that was awesome and not necessarily surprising, but when we asked him about his favorite non-Hounds team, like the passion that came out of his voice when he started talking about Napoli and Dortmund, I almost feel like we should have him on and just have like a no Hounds show. And just be like, let's talk about any other soccer other than the Hounds and just see where it goes. Because I think that it could just be a ton of fun. So, we had a lot of fun, you know, talking to Coach Brandt. Obviously, we're going to try to get him back on before the preseason coming up this year to get his thoughts, see how things have gone in the off season. Speaking of off season, you know, we're trying to iron out what it is that we want to do in the off season. Because I think we've been doing weekly shows, but now that there aren't any games, there's still a lot of content, but I don't know if there's enough to keep us going weekly between now and the start of the season. So we got a few more shows that we'd like to do here, you know, over the next few weeks, and then maybe we'll move to something like monthly. We'll see. But if there's anything in particular that you'd like to hear us talk about, maybe you want to come on the show and talk about particular topics, let us know, because we're happy to do it. We love getting together and just talking. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do if there's like a stretch of 2 weeks where I don't talk to you guys. It's going to feel like I'm going through withdrawal. So,
like we're your therapy or something like
it
that.
It is. This is total therapy. So yeah, we need to keep doing it. But guys, I guess, is there anything else, you know, before we wrap this thing up? I'm just getting.
Yay Klopp. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh,
I so badly wanted to cut him off and just be like, no.
Don't fuel the beast.
Yeah.
Don't
do it. Short.
All right. Well, like I said, we're still figuring things out. So let us know, you know, about the next few weeks. If there's anybody you want us to talk to, anything you want us to talk about, hit us up. You can find us on Twitter at Mongols. Email us at mongols@bgn.fm. Head over to iTunes, subscribe to the show, leave us a review. Otherwise, let us know what you thought about this one. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.
Later.
Before you go, please, help us to keep doing what we're doing by becoming a supporter of the show. Head over to mongols.com and click on the Become a Supporter button. For as little as $1 per month, just $1, you can help keep the show commercial free while also getting a say in who we interview, the questions we ask, what we talk about, and you can get some sweet gear as well. Thanks again to all of our listeners for your continued support. That's mongols.com. Click on Become a Supporter. Mongols.com. Become a Supporter. Thanks.